This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net. This is episode 15 of Novel Approaches here on the RightsCast Network. Welcome to the RightsCast Network's Novel Approaches podcast, a craft-focused conversation for writers everywhere.
Because writing novels is hard, and we're all in it together.
Hey there, I'm author, editor, and RightsCast Network founder, R.R. Campbell.
And I'm Sione Ashleman, freelance editor, book addict, and co-host of the Novel Approaches podcast.
This time on Novel Approaches, we'll examine prologues and epilogues, what they are, what makes them different from first and last chapters, and how to write them effectively. But first, Sione, it feels like it's been a lifetime since we last recorded an episode.
It does feel like a very long time. I'm not sure what happened. I think there was a scheduling thing.
I think that might have been the case, too. Maybe we recorded a little early last month, but I don't know. It's also just been a busy month, so it's hard to say where any of the time has gone, really.
I have no idea. I feel like a lot has happened in between. Like, I can't even remember what early May looked like, because we were just coming off of, we were, like, doing Rev Pit stuff.
Right, yeah, Rev Pit happened, and I've had a lot of travel on the weekends throughout May, so it's all disappeared. So with that in mind, maybe we should center ourselves a little bit. Sione, what do you have to look forward to? What's happening currently in your life so that we have a record of it and it doesn't slip away?
That's what my journal's for. No, I'm really excited because I think I mentioned last time that I would be getting an intern for the summer from my alma mater.
You sure did.
We discussed how to say. And so she started, Sam Pratt, very excited about that. She's going to be helping me with several things, including setting up a newsletter. I'm going to experiment with doing like a monthly newsletter for people who are interested in writer and editor type things. It's a big step for me. I've been very newsletter averse up to this point. And also we have a secret project.
Oh boy.
I know that we're going to be working on. And here's the hint. This week, what I did toward it is I started researching how to pitch an anthology, kind of gives a lot away, but not too much.
You know, I don't want to pull the rug out from underneath you, but I think it was on air that we talked about what you wanted to do with that anthology, maybe in our last episode. So the cat might already be out of the bag somewhere in the ether.
Oh my God. What happened to my brain? I just don't remember any of this.
You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm inventing it, too. It could have been a pre-recording conversation for all I remember. We can't trust me either at this point.
It could have been a pre-recording conversation, or this could all be a big ploy on my part to make people go back and listen to the previous episode of Novel Approaches.
You know, and that episode was about inciting incidents, which is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. You know, I feel like we brought in some nice outside of the podcast input with some readings from actual books and their inciting incidents. Boy, oh boy, this is turning into an advertisement for our previous episode. Good job.
You're welcome. And then sort of the other thing is, because I go through periods where I will binge buy, I mentioned being a book addict in my intro today, and I binge buy books, and then I'm like, no more books. I mean, you can see, people listening at home can't see, but you can see these are my to-be-read lists that are just, like, that are just here. That doesn't count what's sitting next to my bed, and that doesn't count all of the ebooks that I have.
Are those all recent purchases that you just showed me?
Well, when you say recent, what I mean is... No, they're like from the last year-ish, because I also go through like book reading binges where I'll read like 3 books in a month, and then I just won't have the energy for anything outside of reading for my work.
Right.
But what I did is I came across this article on The Verge. Mm-hmm. I think it was like one of these pocket recommendations, you know, when you hit up Google and it's like, look, here are some articles that you would like. And it's these 8 short story collections would make excellent sci-fi anthology shows. And I already owned a few of them. Ursula Le Guin's The Unreal and the Real, Charlie Jane Anders' 6 Months, 3 Days, 5 Others, and Isaac Asimov's iRobot. And I was like, well, obviously I have to buy Paolo Bacigalupi and N.K. Jemisin and I don't know how to pronounce it. Cixin Liu? Do you know who I'm talking about?
I think I've seen the name. Yeah, I think I've seen it, but I can't say I've read anything.
They wrote The Three-Body Problem.
Oh, that sounds familiar. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They also have I don't know what their pronouns are, so I'm just using the gender neutral one. They also have a short story anthology. And then in addition to that, I bought, and then I was like, oh, that reminds me, Ken Liu, because Ken Liu is the one that translates Cixin Liu. And so I bought The Paper Menagerie and Other Stories, and that, I'm enjoying that one a lot. So that was my recent book binge, was a whole bunch of spec fic short stories.
Yeah, and I know listeners couldn't see the video that you showed me of your TBR pile, but I will say that what you showed me looked like it was about 3 dozen books, at least, just sitting there. If I had to guess, just eyeing it up. I mean, we don't need a count, but it was a fair number of books.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. How about you? What are you up to? Because you just did all of this, like, conferencing and traveling.
Yeah, it was quite the May. I am very tired, but yeah, there were events this last month in La Crosse, in Green Bay, in Eau Claire. I was in Madison for WISCON. That you mentioned Charlie Jane Anders. Charlie Jane Anders was actually at WISCON as the guest of honor. That one of the guests of honor this year. Yeah, definitely. I didn't have an opportunity to go to the guest of honor speech because I was in the dealer's room and was just very exhausted after sitting there for, you know, 4 total days, but it was a good experience. I really enjoyed the conference and had an opportunity to talk a little bit about conflict and tension for one of my sessions, and then my good old fallback of scene structure, which was received well too, and was on a panel about writing a series and what it is that we want to keep in mind when we're writing past book one. So interestingly enough, a lot of things that we cover on this show or have covered on this show in the past. So it was good to, I might have name dropped you a couple times and also of course our podcast to put it out in the ether. So I will say listenership has been up since WISCON. So thank you, WISCON folks, if you are in fact listening. It's great to know that you're here for the ride.
That's exciting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was a really cool community because it's all speculative fiction focused, you know, primarily sci-fi, but there's plenty there for fantasy as well. And yeah, I'm looking forward to next year already, trying to find ways to, I want to team up. I'll put this out there into the world too. If you are a Wisconsin writer of speculative fiction, please email me at either writescast@gmail.com or at rrcampbellwrites@gmail.com because I would like to get a network together so that we can go to these conferences together and maybe do some tabling together and have a broader, you know, set of offerings and help connect our readers with one another and ourselves with one another too. So reach out to me because I think that would be a really effective way to help grow the speculative fiction movement in Wisconsin and hopefully in the Midwest eventually too.
Well, and I have another friend who writes sci-fi that I think I emailed you about, who went to WISCON this year.
Oh, you did,
and
yeah.
I don't think you guys got to meet, but I think you guys would get along really well. And he was saying that the he went to several panels and talks that were sort of like social justice related or like world building related that sounded fascinating.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting.
There were some really neat panels I was able to slip out and attend. There was one about capitalist anxiety and like how we cope with, you know, being creators in a very, you know, capitalist society that we live in. There's also one, I didn't get to go to this, but here's a sampling of the kind of thing they will have panels on. There was an entire panel on labor exploitation in space.
Yes, he went to that one.
Did he really? Did he like it?
Yeah, and he also went to one on writing LGBTQ characters.
Yep, I went to that one also, actually. That was another one. It felt important to me to listen to some perspectives on that, obviously, since I have a number of characters who happen to be members of the broader LGBTQ community. So it was really great. I mean, I learned a lot in the few sessions I was able to get to, and it was nice to be able to hang out in that dealer's room and connect with prospective readers and folks who had already at least heard of the books that I've got out there, all those empathy books. So yeah, I'm just looking forward now to going to Montana at the end of this month. I'm going to get in my car with my wife. We're going to drive to Montana, and we are going to sleep out of our car for a good chunk of it, but we do have a few days at a Airbnb, so it's going to be nice. I'm just going to disappear into the woods for a week, and no one's going to hear from me. Don't worry. I'm probably fine unless I got eaten by a bear, but I'm looking forward to the trip no matter what.
Disconnecting sounds really nice. I mean, I'm guessing you'll still have your phone in case of emergencies, but...
Yeah, I'll certainly have that around just in case. And plus, you know, it's good to take pictures, etc. My wife and I did this a couple of years ago to go to Yellowstone, and we did a similar thing, except we didn't have an Airbnb there at all. We literally just slept in the back of her hatchback for like a week, and that was an awesome trip, and we just decided it was time to... go away for a little bit here. So it'll be 7 or 8 days, which is going to be nice. You know, fingers crossed, no flat tires. I'm always nervous about that while driving, but that's just my generalized anxiety disorder. What are you going to do about it?
Well, you know how to change a tire, right?
Yeah, I'm sure I could figure it out. What's the internet for?
Okay.
full confession, I mean, I have done it, but I haven't had to do it in like 10 plus years, you know? So it's one of those things where it's like, well, I'd grab everything that I need to do it. I'd stare at it for a second and go, oh yeah, here we go. It's just, I'm not going to know until I'm forced to confront it. And I don't want to be forced to confront it, so.
No.
Right.
No. You can always get AAA.
That's true. Thing. Yeah, just short-term AAA help situation.
Yeah.
So. Well, very good. A lot of things to look forward to here for both you and for me as well. But maybe we should look forward now to the conversation. That's why we're here after all. And we're talking today about prologues and epilogues. We're trying a little bit of a new format here today, listeners. We really want to make sure that we're incorporating as much feedback as we can into these conversations. And a lot of that feedback does come from our RightsCast chats that we have before recording every episode. And this last RightsCast chat was a very vibrant one. So we're going to use the answers that we got from folks in that chat as our guide for this conversation, starting with question one, which is just, you know, what are prologues? What are prologues? What are epilogues? What are we even talking about here? So, Sion, I don't know if you want to start with the first tweet here that we had from Cinna.
Yeah, sure. So Cinna, who has been a loyal regular of our RightsCast chats, which we really appreciate, he tweets at CINAEDHVIK. And so his response to what are prologues and epilogues, they're to provide necessary information that recontextualizes chapter one. This is about prologues. A prologue can change the tone or level set the reader as to genre, style, and content, especially if the characters do not have that information right away, but you need it to understand what comes in chapter one, right? Epilogues are, to me, he continues, something that can be used to bridge to a sequel by introducing a new problem or wrapping up additional threads that didn't fit in the main narrative. Maybe it's a B-side or a bonus track.
I like that he's pulling in a musical example there, that B-side or a bonus track. That's good. I like that. We also had some feedback from Whitney Hill. Whitney tweets at @write_wherever. Whitney talks a little bit about why she included a prologue or epilogue here, and she says, quote, "I included one because there was one last scene that would highlight a relationship I plan to grow, as well as hint at an evolution in the next book in the series." But, she adds, the content there wasn't long enough to merit a chapter, and so it sounds like she called it an epilogue instead.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Next we have MixMA, who tweets at SkysongMA. She said, okay, so I just said I don't like prologues. Side note, what she actually said was that she's allergic to prologues,
yes.
Which I thought was hilarious.
Yes.
Yeah. So she says she doesn't like prologues, but I had three of them in my debut. three of them. Okay, sorry, I'm going off track. It was a pros and cons question. My two main characters had 17 years of nasty history, and any attempts to rehash it in the present after the inciting incident didn't work out.
Right. And that is, I will say, without, you know, giving short shrift to the next tweet I'm going to read here, I was actually a beta reader for that manuscript that Emmy is talking about with three prologues. And that book is, of course, published now. That one is Death of a Bachelor, for folks who are interested in checking that out. I was very skeptical of the three prologue approach. I tried to say maybe we could just call them chapters, but in the end, I think looking at how it fit into the broader picture, she was right, very justified in calling them prologues. It is a very interesting choice. Like you said, we don't see that very often, but I think that if anyone out there really wants to see an example of how stacking prologues to start a book could work, definitely consider checking out Death of a Bachelor by M.A. Hinkle. So, yeah, with that thrown out into the world here, we've got one more tweet we will share here before we get into our analysis of this. This one is from Cass Fick. Cass tweets at CM_Fick. Cass says, I think prologues can be used to share information outside the POV, the point of view in the manuscript, or information that happens before the inciting incident. Epilogues, I think, are utilized to wrap up a story or convey information important to the next step in the series. So, seeing some commonalities across the responses here, I don't know if you want me to bounce the ball over to your side of the court, if you have any reactions to any of these tweets that stand out to you right away.
No, I'm happy to hear what you have to say about this first, because I think you're sort of like anti-prologue in general, isn't that right?
So I have historically been pretty anti-prologue, anti-epilogue. I think, as tends to be the case, once we have these RightsCast chats, I generally find my stance on these matters softening a little bit. I think that for my writing personally, I can't see myself ever making use of a prologue or an epilogue, but one of the things that really stood out to me here was actually not in one of these particular tweets, but something that Cinna said later in the chat, and that was about making sure that there's a reason. There has to be some sort of storytelling mechanism that is justifying why we're either including a prologue or an epilogue, or why we're framing it as a prologue or epilogue. And one of the things that I really appreciate in this series of tweets is that we are seeing some arguments in favor of calling them a prologue or an epilogue, or of including them in the first place. And it doesn't quite come out maybe here. It does a little bit in MA's response, where she talks about these two main characters having 17 years of nasty history between them. One of the reasons that I think you could use a prologue would be to, for example, get information on the page that, yes, is going to be relevant, but is removed from the timeline of our true story in a pretty significant way. So I definitely think that is a way that, you know, we can go ahead and take advantage of a prologue if, of course, that information, this is where I will start to turn back to my more calcified approach to this. I will say it's fair game to do it that way if it's not possible to stitch that information in to the greater narrative in places where, you know, it's going to be more immediately relevant to how characters are reacting in an immediate scene, if that makes sense. Because I'm all about stitching. I'm all about that.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, we're kind of getting, you know, into like what makes for an effective epilogue and prologue. So, but yeah, I think that makes sense what you're saying. I also have seen, like, speaking of Charlie Jane Anders, Charlie Jane Anders' novel, All the Birds in the Sky, starts in the main character's childhood, and the first few chapters, which I believe are just, I think I just looked at it. Yeah, it starts in chapter one. So, and it just starts with chapter one and starts in their childhoods, and it includes, obviously, it's not like a minute-by-minute account of their lives growing up or anything, but it includes some important scenes from their childhoods, much in the way it sounds like Nix M.A.'s prologues worked, But Charlie Jean Anders just called it Chapter One.
Right, and that's something that I think we'll definitely see as, I guess maybe I'll put it this way, because I don't think we'll really explore it too much later in the conversation. We did do a poll after the RightsCast chat ended, and we asked, I tried to use hashtags that would get more readers to respond as opposed to writers, because, you know, we have a different understanding of prologues and epilogues because of how we choose to either use them or not use them, and asked readers, you know, how do you feel about prologues or epilogues? And one of the things that came out in a couple of the replies to the poll were readers who said, you know, I often find that sometimes what's labeled as a prologue could in some cases just be called a chapter one, and it all comes down to nomenclature, you know, how do you want to frame it, and sometimes it's just up to you as the author, right?
So, well, that I think that's a good segue into, like, kind of taking a step back and coming back to this original question, which is, what are prologues and epilogues? And so when you open a book and you see prologue, what does that indicate to you?
It normally indicates that I will close the book and put it back on the shelf. You set me up for that way too well. I was waiting on that. I tried so hard not to interrupt, but I'm only like half kidding. Honestly, if I open up and see a prologue, I think it's all going to depend. How I receive that prologue will depend on a few things. And the interesting thing about that is I'm only ever going to know if it was worth including that prologue or if it was worth calling it a prologue after I've read it. And so you're kind of asking me as a reader, at least a reader who is prologue averse, you're asking me to make a commitment, at which point I'm then going to have like this break. You know, I'm going to finish reading the prologue and then I'm going to go, okay, do I want to continue with this story now? Whereas I think if you call it like a chapter one, well, then I feel like I'm already maybe a little committed or something like that. So I don't know. I guess I feel like I'm trying to unintentionally drag our conversation away from defining a prologue or an epilogue. But if I open something up and I see a prologue, like for me as a reader, I'm expecting that information to be, you know, remote in some way. It's information that's going to be remote in some way from the larger thrust of the story, but still needs to have some relevance for where we're going to see that story go in the end, whether it's in those immediate chapters or it'll make sense a little bit later, perhaps, too.
Yeah, I think that word remote is a good one. And that gets close to what I expect when I see prologue too. Like the most obvious answer is when I see prologue, it indicates that whatever is included in that section is going to be set up. And I think that's where prologues often get a bad rap, is because people have experienced setup that they feel either could have been woven in, like you're talking about, or that wasn't actually necessary, and keeps them at a distance from the story that they signed on to read when they opened the book after reading the book blurb, right? But also it could be, as you said, related to the main narrative. Like it could be from a different, what it says to me is that like it's not chapter one, because even though it's necessary and it'll introduce you to the story, it's not going to set up accurate expectations for what most of the narrative is. So that could be either that it takes place like way back in time, like we were talking about earlier, or from a different point of view as the main narrative. And that could even be like from a, I'm losing my words here, from a omniscient, from an omniscient or an objective point of view, where most of the tale is told, I don't know, from close third person or even first person, things like that.
With that, let's pause for a moment for a brief word from, well, me. Your book, our airwaves, yes, it's true, anything is possible when you advertise with the RightsCast Network. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, RightsCast Network founder, and I'm here to let you know that you can now advertise your book, podcast, editing services, whatever creative endeavor, you can advertise it here on the RightsCast Network. Not only that, but you can advertise with us for less than $1 a month, yes, We offer packages for as little as less than a dollar a month. So get your book, your editing services podcast, what have you, introduced to hundreds of new listeners by advertising with us today at rightscast.net/advertise or email me at rightscast@gmail.com and we can get started. Let's make it happen for you and your creative endeavors. That's your book, our airwaves, rightscast.net/advertise. Right, yeah, and I think that those are all good reasons, I think, to choose to use a prologue or to use an epilogue as opposed to then calling it, you know, that first or that final chapter. And I think what's really interesting here is we did have a spot in our episode document set aside to talk about what makes prologues and epilogues different from first and last chapters, but I think we're already kind of touching on that. You know, we're talking about this idea of remoteness. We're talking about, you give the example of, we might have a different narrative mode that we're employing in that prologue or in that epilogue for reasons that should become apparent either over the course of the story or immediately once it begins, or after we finish that epilogue, we go, oh, okay, this made a few other dominoes fall that it wouldn't have been possible to knock over had we not slipped into this other narrative mode or jumped into the future or whatever the case might be. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on other ways that prologues are different from first chapters or epilogues are different from last chapters that are kind of floating out there, because I think you touched on a lot of really good ones already.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've also, though, seen authors integrate those kinds of things into a chapter one. So, I mean, I felt like I had a much clearer idea before our chat.
Interesting.
Of what I thought.
Right.
And now, especially since I've been doing a lot of thinking about, I think prologues to some extent, is genre dependent, right? We've talked about this before, how certain different genres have different conventions. But when I think about the genres I read a lot of sci-fi and fantasy, for example. And when I think about books that are being published now, I can't remember the last current book that I read that starts with a prologue. But I do know of books that start with a prologue-y type thing that is just chapter one. So I'm wondering if they're just sort of falling out of fashion, whether we've decided that we don't need to call them a prologue anymore, because in the past people like to be eased into books and eased out of them, and we don't need or want that anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that could tie in too to some of what you've talked about specifically in past episodes about how the nature of storytelling might undergo changes, of course, as readers' tastes change, talking about rather than beginning with our first inciting, you know, as you framed it, we might see stories just starting at that second inciting incident right away because we want to get our readers in the story right away. So maybe we are in a transitional period where we're not going to quite call them prologues, at least, and, you know, a lot of books aren't going to include them at all, but we might see some sneaky little chapter ones that have prologue-type elements, because if they're at least branded as a first chapter, they're not going to turn off readers like me who open up a book and see prologue and scan it to see if it's really going to be worth my time before I go on to that chapter one or not.
Right, yeah. Well, and I think now, too, maybe we just have different ideas about what can go, how a book can start, how a chapter one can start. Because even if we're like, one of the examples given that I think Mixamé said, you know, like fantasy novels might sometimes start with a myth, and she really hates that.
Agreed.
But I think these days, like, you could start chapter one with a myth and then have a, you know, blank space, white space, and then start into the narrative. And as long as it's clear that there's a division there, there's no reason for the reader to need that as a prologue as opposed to how the story begins.
Yeah, I've actually seen some manuscripts even from my clients that have made use of that. And it's normally a very brief, sometimes it's like a 4-line stanza. It could be like a poem that they're pulling from another work of literature, or it could be something that they have invented because it fits in their speculative world. And oftentimes what I find is when it's framed like that and it's just kind of put in there at the start of chapter one. We get a nice little a page break before the actual action begins. It's a really powerful framing device, and it's also very concise, which I appreciate because I am, of course, about being economical with our storytelling. And so when we check all those boxes, that's a prologue not called a prologue that I can get behind.
When I think about, do you mind if I talk about epilogues, or do you have another thing about prologues you want to say?
No, let's go ahead and touch on epilogues here, and then we'll get right into talking about writing them effectively, prologues and epilogues.
Okay. So, so I just to continue the, are they necessary or what are they even? An epilogue, when I look at that, I think it's an unnecessary, by definition of the story having already wrapped up satisfactorily, right? Mm-hmm. It's a little bit gratuitous, but it can be nice if you are not quite ready to leave the world and the characters behind, right? And epilogues work differently because the reader has already gotten through the whole book and liked it well enough to finish it. And so they are already invested. And so it's not a big ask. It's actually a gift at that point to have an epilogue as opposed to an ask like a prologue is. Does that make sense?
It does. And I'm really glad that you raised that point because it is very true. You know, we can get to the end of a book and we will know that everything is resolved. And we as a reader can then turn the page, see the word epilogue and go, okay, yeah, I do kind of want to know what we're going to get here. Or you might say, you know, I appreciated this book. Maybe I'm not as committed. You can kind of set it aside and you still know the full story. And unless the author has, you know, hidden away some deep secret in their epilogue that will totally turn the entire story on its head, which also, I don't know if that's in maybe our best interest as an author, that's another conversation. But I can always, as a reader, just go, okay, you know, I liked what I got here. Maybe it's okay to not read the epilogue and still feel good about the experience I've had.
So as a reader, would you tend to like skip the epilogue?
It depends. I mean, it's all about commitment, you know? So like, for example, if you have a series that you are writing and, you know, you have had people commit to reading a multi-book series, I as a reader have committed to reading this and we get to the last book. And for the first time, you know, out of however many books, there's an epilogue at the very end of the series. I'm pot committed, you know, as they would say in poker. Like, I'm going to read that epilogue. It's like in Harry Potter is the example I think most people are going to be familiar with. There wasn't an epilogue in every book. I mean, if I'm wrong, someone please correct me. Someone surely will. But we did get that epilogue at the end of the final book in this series. And yeah, I was going to read that. I was committed to the world. I was committed to the characters. The epilogue wasn't, you know, 90 pages long. It was a short sort of, almost like a, maybe not a soliloquy, but it was just this nice little way to draw the series to a close and let us know that not only did the main action of the series end in a way that was generally good for our main cast of characters, but they were able to go on and live reasonable lives and we get a brief, you know, peek into that. And it was a nice way to draw that series to a close. And I, as a reader, was willing to commit to it at that point.
Yeah, well, and that dovetails with something that Mixa May mentioned because she writes romance, and epilogues are pretty common in romance because it's a way of really driving home the happy ending, yep. Right? And reassuring the reader that they stay happy.
Right, yes. It wasn't just a temporary, fleeting thing that you got to see. Please trust me that they are now happily ever after.
Right. Yeah.
And I think, you know, we're talking a little bit about, you know, what prologues and epilogues are, of course, but maybe let's jump in now to how can we make them worth it? We've talked about what they are and like ways that you can include them or maybe justify, quote unquote, including them. But how do we get there? And we did, of course, ask this question of the folks who participated in the WritesCast chats. We'll go ahead and read some of their feedback here. I can kick it off this time. This one is from Cass. Cass says, when it comes to making an effective prologue, her tweet says, keep it short. That's it.
That's practicing what you preach.
Yep, exactly. There, it was perfect. There was really good synergy between her tweet and the content of her tweet. So thank you, Cass. Yes, point very well taken. Keep it short. But we also had some feedback here from Whitney Hill as well.
Yeah, Whitney says, not usually a fan of prologues, but the ones I liked stuck with the main character of the main plot and focused on some kind of past conflict or trauma that would impact the present day slash main storyline.
Right, and then of course we had more input here from Cinna. Cinna says that an effective prologue is made by, quote, it has to be more than a chapter zero. It has to be more than just backstory, or a flashback, or a hook. If your prologue is more exciting than your chapter one, you have a pacing problem and a bait and switch problem. It has to have a reason to exist as a prologue.
I have something to say about that later, but first, I'm going to just continue this. And Mixame said, an effective prologue also conveys information in an elegant way. My eyes roll into the back of my head whenever a story starts with an ancient myth or whatever. It's clunky. We just mentioned this one last time. Yeah,
definitely. I kind of want to start with Cinna, only because you mentioned you'd have something to say about it. And I also have some things I wanted to reflect on there. So let's start right there. Why don't we start with you?
Yeah, well, I had a sort of a follow-up conversation off the hashtag, but still in public, with Cinna about this, because his comment made me think of when stories start in medias res, and then maybe in, it could be with a prologue. Usually I think it is with a prologue. It starts in medias res and with, like, I don't know, could be some kind of outrageous situation the main characters have gotten themselves into, unexpected or dangerous or something like that. And then chapter one, the structure is that chapter one then sort of takes you back to the beginning of the story, and the expectation is that you're going to learn how the main character got themselves in this outrageous situation. And actually, I really like that strategy. Like, that for me, that's a great way to hook me. I find that very effective. Cinna says he hates it when that happens because it feels like, as he said in his tweet, a bait and switch. It feels like being set up for something very exciting, and then it goes back to, I think his example was like boring day on the beach. So I just thought it was really interesting to note that what I find very effective, he does not find at all effective. It actually makes him mad.
Well, and I think that's something that kind of was brought to the fore in that poll that we did after the chat as well, where we asked readers for input. There were a number of comments there where people were identifying the same kind of, you know, things about prologues and epilogues. And some people really liked prologues and epilogues for that reason, and other people really did not. So I think, again, I don't know, it comes back to that sort of, there's no accounting for taste at some point. You know, I think that it all depends on when we're the writer. We have to decide if we think using that sort of flash forward prologue, we could probably frame it as that, if using that is going to be the best way to fuel our story. You know, do we want to have a sense of dramatic irony kind of draped over our story leading up to the moment that we actually do get forward to the point that we showed in our prologue? Or do we want to just take advantage of suspense and use that to build up to that, you know, climactic moment that we're presumably showing in the prologue? So, yeah, I don't know. It all comes down to what you're after as a reader, I guess, and maybe as a writer, of course, too, since that is generally what we focus on. And I'll say this on Cinna's point here too. When he talks about the bait and switch, I actually thought that was a really elucidating point. And at the same time, I think it's also one that we have to view through, you know, with a caveat, and that is, of course, you know, it's a bait and switch, I think, to the extent that if, yeah, we're going to start with a character who is very remote and far removed from our true main character in that prologue, and we're going to focus on them, and let's say we find ourselves really rooting for this person, but then we get to a chapter one and it's a totally different person and we don't really see this other individual again, that would feel like a bait and switch, and that would make me feel like, okay, well, I sure hope whatever that character did in the prologue proves to be relevant, because now you have to get me on board with a totally new character. That said, multi-POV narratives, of course, do this all the time and can do this all the time. In fact, I think it was even Cinna who brought this up at some point, you know, in a long comment thread at some point during the RightsCast chat, talking about the A Song of Ice and Fire series, of course, by George R.R. Martin. Every one of those books begins with a prologue from the perspective of a character who dies. Like, you just know that's part of how this is going to work. You're going to be with a character who sees an important event occur that is going to have some sort of impact over the course of the series as a whole, or over the course of, you know, some of the earlier chapters, or at some point in the course of that book, and then they're gone, and that's it. And it's just part of the conceit of the series. You're either into it or you're not, and if you're not into it but you still like the books, you could skip that prologue. You know, you don't necessarily need it, but you might miss out on some interesting details or perspectives you might not have had otherwise. So in that regard, it's not totally a bait and switch to start with a different POV, because it's the expectation has been set that that's what we're doing. But if there is a situation where you're switching characters and we're not really getting back to that person in the prologue and it doesn't feel like it was worth it, then yeah, it kind of does feel like a bait and switch.
Four people, one study, the internet access brain implant to bind or destroy them all. Now available in print and ebook from author R.R. Campbell and Nine Star Press, it's Imminent Dawn, the first book in the epic empathy sci-fi saga. Learn more about the book reviewers are calling freaking sci-fi Game of Thrones and an incisive techno-thriller that gets more tense with every page by visiting empathyseries.com. That's empathyseries.com. Thanks for listening.
I think about murder mysteries too, and where you have like the book begin, it could be a prologue with, as you were saying, a character that dies, right? It could be with the murder itself from the perspective of the victim, or from the perspective of the murderer if you do it very carefully. But it's in that sort of situation, the genre has already set the expectation that then the rest of the book is going to be about figuring out why and how this person died, right? So you have the genre conventions to help set the expectation for the purpose of that prologue, is what I'm trying to say.
And I'm really glad you used the word purpose there, because I think that at the core of this question, you know, what makes an effective prologue, what everyone was getting at, with the exception of maybe Cass, but I think there's value in the way that it was framed by Cass as well. You know, we want to have a purpose behind it. If a prologue is the most elegant way that we can convey this information, if the inclusion of that prologue is such that it makes some elements of our story to come very much worth it and very much worth having seen it in a way that's been framed as a prologue, then I think we've set up an effective prologue. Now, whether that's true or not, and how we write an effective prologue, is dependent entirely on the story that we're trying to tell to some point. You know, every story is going to have if we think of it from, I'm going to turn it into a linguistics thing, but I don't want to go down that rabbit hole too hard. But prologue is a feature that's either turned on or off for a given book, and only we as the author can decide whether that is a feature that is turned on and whether it's worth including that to illuminate, if it's a switch, if it's going to illuminate the story in a positive way, or if it's going to outshine what's to come, for example.
I'm taking that in. I know you're not supposed to have silence during a podcast, but I'm just thinking about what you're saying. And especially in light of some of these other points that the people who joined us for the chat made, and in light of the conversation that we just had about the dwindling popularity of prologues and how some people like really hate them. I'm just thinking about, okay, from a writer's perspective, if you're trying to make a decision about whether or not to have a prologue, given that there are so many ways now to open books in chapter one that are acceptable to people, right? Given that there are so many people that like R.R. Campbell, who will open a book and see a prologue and put it down.
Yes, that is me.
Yeah, then I guess, like, and I think, you know, Mixame, obviously being allergic to prologues, had very good reasons, and you ended up agreeing with them for actually having a prologue. But I think I would say at this point that if there's any way you can get not have a prologue, if you can just take what would be the prologue and put it in chapter one and then do a blank line and then start from there, then why not do that? Because it seems like your chances of harming your book in the eyes of the reader are greater for having a prologue. All that said, I actually don't mind prologues when they are done well. I am not one of those people that opens it and thinks prologue and rolls my eyes, because it's all about, again, effectiveness, right? I think the reason that, and I said this earlier, they get a bad rap is because writers will try to use them in ways that are, they'll try to use them in order to front load backstory.
Yes.
As opposed, yeah. And it's just, it's not a very, I don't want to be too negative, but it just, it's not a very skillful way of doing it. Like, there are better ways to do it, to get that backstory in.
And that's where, right, and that's where a lot of that stitching or that threading of that information comes into play. It's being very judicious and deliberate about the timing with which we convey that backstory and how we want to fit it in places where, okay, it is truly necessary that at this exact moment we have that backstory, as opposed to just getting it, you know, 200 pages before it actually might mean anything. So I think, again, it's that key to the effectiveness of a prologue, it seems, really boils down to relevance. And I think maybe another dimension of that is the timeliness. You know, how soon did we really need that information in the prologue? And when will it come back around that it'll be apparent that this was a good choice and, you know, the right choice on the part of the author in terms of presenting their story? And I don't know if you have any final thoughts on this. We're kind of against the clock here. But if you have any final thoughts here on effective prologues.
I mean, we could just keep going on. So that's fine. Let's move on to epilogues then.
All right. Well, then let's go ahead and, hop into what makes an effective epilogue.
Yeah, let's start with Whitney Hill's comment. She says, effective epilogues, not repeating information, but not introducing completely new information. It's a by the way or a wrap up of final thoughts, not a guess what, or using it as an amuse-bouche for the next book.
And then Cass adds, I think that the key to an effective epilogue is to A, keep it short. So a theme here from Cass, keeping it short. And Cass adds B, keep it relevant to either the outstanding story threads or to reveal info that wasn't revealed in the story, but is still important in the wrap-up of the book.
Sorry, I was just looking at, do you want me to read Whitney's again?
Oh yeah, if you want to do, oh, did we include hers twice?
It's on including an epilogue, but not a prologue.
Okay, yeah, we'll cut out that, my weird silence there then. So I think there's some interesting things coming out of Cass's tweet here. Cass mentioned something about relevant to outstanding story threads or revealing info that wasn't revealed in the story but is still important to wrap up the book. And I think those are interesting observations to me, because I think the way that you have framed and the way that I have kind of framed epilogues earlier in the conversation was such that, well, we would have those threads wrapped up already. And then the epilogue is like, you know, it's that director's cut bonus footage kind of thing. And I don't know if, do you see a way forward in writing an effective epilogue such that we're still, you know, tying up these threads? Or do you think at that point we should still be calling it a last chapter?
So, yeah, what this brings up for me is, what's the difference between a denouement and an epilogue, right? Because a denouement is what happens after the primary conflict is resolved, usually like end of climax, but the denouement is necessary still in order to wrap up some subplots and things like that, those dangling threads, as others have called them. And I know that Cass writes, she writes like epic fantasy and sci-fi and series mainly. And so I could see how an epilogue might continue to touch on dangling threads that are dangling because you have a next book in the series. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, it's kind of like we talk about it in the writing a series episode of this show. You know, there's your series arc, and then there are your installment arcs along the way. And you might have made some progress on your series arc over the course of a book, And then in the epilogue, you are kind of touching on that progress in a way that frames how we might see it going forward. It's kind of our pivot point, if we're talking about it in terms of scene structure. It's our pivot point that's going to give that springboard for our readers to understand, okay, well, we've seen some progress on our series arc. This is where it might go in the next book. You know, go forth and read if you so choose. I think that that could be a way that that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, there are people who are really going to disagree with me about this, but I just want to say, like, if you are in a position where you're publishing books in a series kind of close together, or if you've already published like the first three and now you're publishing the last and you're publishing updated versions of the first three, obviously this is more possible when you're self-publishing. Like if you're traditional publishing, you have, obviously there are a lot of other factors and you're not really in control of how that happens. But I have read series where the epilogues kind of like raise the hint at the primary conflict of the next book. And if that book is already out, then that will get me to read it. I also know, like, in my private, not private, but in my follow-up conversation with Whitney about some of the stuff that she said about how she uses an epilogue, she would strongly disagree using that ploy. And I totally understand why. I mean, most people hate a cliffhanger. They're going to be a little bit grumpy about that.
Right. I mean, it's always a really difficult choice to make as an author when you're writing a series, is how do you resolve all of these threads from the book that you've just presented without resolving everything so much that readers aren't like, oh boy, well, I can't wait to see what comes next. You know, we have to find ways to, in my view, I am much more of a use your powers of suggestion writer to give a thought, you know, to get readers actively thinking about, well, what are the consequences for what I just read and how might they play out in the next book, as opposed to perhaps including an epilogue that's like, behold, reader, these are the consequences for what you just read, and now you will know what happens in the next book. Because, yeah, that's good. But I mean, I want to, particularly I think for myself as a writer, I'm looking to have readers come to the series that I'm writing who, you know, consider themselves readers who are up for a challenge, who are going to be willing to look, you know, between the lines and really explore context and subtext in ways that, yeah, when you finish a book, I want you to go, okay, all right, I feel like we closed that chapter and now my brain is churning about what's going to come next for our characters. That works really well for some readers, but as you mentioned, there are plenty of others who might want to be in a position where it's like, all right, well, that was cool. Boy, I can't wait to know what happens next. All right, give me a little taste. Now I've got a taste. Time for the next book. So again, it depends on the readership that we're trying to reach, and it depends on what we think is going to be best for the tone of the story that we're telling and, you know, the nature of the narrative itself, I guess.
Yeah, I think I'm just thinking some more about, like, so there is the using the epilogue as a way to draw people into the next book. If there isn't a next book, we talked about it can be a way to sort of drive home that happy ending, especially if there's if it's a romance book or something. But also, sort of more broadly speaking, because when we're talking about the driving home of the happy ending, what we're really talking about is showing the new norm. And so that can be another purpose of the epilogue, is to show what the new normal looks like a year or whatever down the road.
Yeah, I think that that's a way to look at it too. I think that is a way to make an epilogue effective. I think that because we're all about points and counterpoints here, because I think the only way we learn is if we explore this stuff in depth and consider all the sides of it. As you say that, I think about the story circle structure that, you know, we've touched on in past episodes, and how the final step of that story circle is that you've returned, quote unquote, home, but having changed. And to me, that suggests that if we were using a story circle model for our plot, that we would want that to fall within the bounds of the story itself and maybe not frame it as an epilogue. But again, that kind of pushes us back into the conversation we had about prologues and epilogues at the start of this conversation, which was sometimes it's just about framing, you know, call a duck, you know, it just depends on what kind of duck you want to call it. You know, is it an epilogue or is it your last chapter? Sometimes it's just a semantic discussion and it's all about how we want to present it again.
Yeah, I mean, even with a story circle structure, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I feel like there is a way to take that last step very literally and show that as part of it. But I think a lot of the narratives that I read leave the characters and the story with a sense of like, everything has been resolved for now. You might have a sense of how things are going to sort of fall into the place moving forward. But the epilogue, again, I'm thinking of it as gratuitous, right? It's like, it's a bonus chapter, if you will, a bonus scene, like you said, that really gives a chance for people to see how, like, whether their guess about how things were going to settle it down, whether it did settle down like that or not.
Yeah, and I think that it's interesting, as we're having this conversation, I'm now considering for myself whether I'm going to include an epilogue at the very end of the Empathy series, because, like, I know how the last chapter of that series ends, and that's how I want it to end, but readers are not going to be happy. I think I'm going to have to write, you know, some kind of epilogue to show a couple months down the road how things turn out for the characters that are still with us at that point. So these conversations are good. They challenge me. Yeah. They make me consider making decisions I wouldn't have been ready to make before we had the talk.
Yeah, obviously, because at the beginning of this conversation, you said you couldn't see yourself ever using a prologue or an epilogue.
Yeah, I did. That's more for prologue specifically. Prologues, definitely not. Look, if you ever catch me publishing a book with a prologue, I want you to call my doctor and let them know you're worried about my welfare, because that means something is wrong.
I'm sure that Mix MA would have said the same thing before she wrote a book that absolutely needed not one or two, but three prologues.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm just being dramatic. Sometimes I just need to be dramatic to remind myself that all options are on the table, I guess. I don't know.
You're going to do everything you can to avoid prologues.
Yes, those for sure. We'll leave it at that. That's a much more even keel way of presenting it. Far less dramatic, far less likely to, far less likely to get people worried. But all right, well, very good. You know, I think we've had a chance to kind of cover what can make an effective epilogue here. I think at this point in the conversation, it's probably good to jump into our listener question, but I think we might have actually touched on this a little bit, because Cinna asked, you know, he has a sense of what makes an epilogue work, but how do we know if we need one? And I think that that's really at the heart of his question here. And I think it all comes down to, it's that writer's choice. You know, how do we want to present what we're setting ourselves up for maybe next in a series? Or how do we want to present the that journey home, that return home moment? At least I think we've kind of covered that to some extent. I don't know if you have anything else you want to add on that.
Well, what I heard you saying, the reason that you think you might write an epilogue for your Empathy series is because even though you know where you have strong feelings about where you want to end the book and a final image and all of that, you are also aware that readers might not be happy with that. And so it's about reader satisfaction.
Yeah, it's also at that point, you know, it's a little bit of a calculus for readers who have decided they're going to stick with the series for what'll ultimately be, you know, 6 or 7 pretty thick books. You know, I have to consider at that point not just what I want as the writer and what's perfect for me, but it is, I think I can see myself including an epilogue as like a thank you. You know, it is that, we talked about it, it's that bonus scene, or it's that director's cut, it's that nice presentation of, you've earned this. You know, as a reader, I feel that you have earned getting this nice little peek into what is the future, what's a little outside the breadth of the story as a whole, but is still perhaps important for you to feel good about the way that things have ended, or as good as is possible anyway.
Yeah. Well, and just to say something that I've already said in a different way for a romance novel, for example, in order to fulfill genre expectations or conventions, sometimes that epilogue is necessary in order to assure the reader that what ended on a happily for now does turn into a happily ever after for those characters.
Yeah, it's very much, again, like you're saying, it's kind of baked into genre at some point, too. That might be a way that we know we need an epilogue. So I think that it all comes down to then, to some extent, knowing your readers and knowing your genre, it seems like. And of course, knowing your story, too. That's obviously part of this. But knowing your readers, knowing your genre, knowing what the expectations are. If you're in a genre that generally, you know, overwhelmingly includes epilogues, probably very much within your rights and should be encouraged to include one. If it's not the case and you're rolling the dice a little bit, well, then it's up to you and the readers that you're looking to reach and how you want to leave things for those readers when the book comes to a close.
I just thought of one more example. You know this, because I keep talking about this historical pirate romance.
Yes.
That I may or may not ever finish in my lifetime.
Right, yes. I look forward to talking about this with you like a year from now.
And I'll be like, what pirate romance? What are you talking about? So I had a plan. So it was going to be like an 8-book series. Now, this is going to sound weird. And it's also because of, you know, whatever. But so the first 3 books, the trilogy is about the 2 main characters getting together. And I had planned to have an epilogue at the end of that 3rd book that is like 6 years in the future from then, that is a scene that involves not just the 2 main characters, but a lot of the minor characters that have come up during those first 3 books, and showing that all of them are paired up in some way.
Okay.
As a way of drawing you into books 4 through 8, which would be standalones about each of the minor characters finding their own love stories.
All right, there you go. See, and that's the other thing this comes down to. You're doing it with a purpose, and you're doing it deliberately with a broader vision for your series in mind, you know? And I think that those are perfect examples of how including epilogue can very much be worth it, because we do want to create these opportunities for folks to continue on with books that are in a series, but as you said, they can stand alone. So like, let's give ourselves a little taste of what we might be able to dip into now that we've read the primary thrust of the original trilogy.
Yeah, exactly. And the way that I had envisioned it, you could stop after the 3rd book. You could stop after that epilogue and be satisfied that everybody finds their happily ever after. But if you are interested in how these other 4 characters find their HEAs, then you would read books 4 through 8. That was the idea.
See, you're already thinking about marketing. You're way ahead. You are doing things that I wish I had considered years ago when I was working on all my books, because now I'm just flailing in marketing world. Look at me flail.
I did so much planning for that series that I'm never going to finish. Anyway, okay, let's move on, because we still had one more from Whitney, who said, probably outside the scope, but I'd be interested in some kind of survey about whether readers love or hate prologues or epilogues and their preferred genre. I see agents posting, if you have a prologue, send your first chapter instead, but not much from readers. And then you, genius that you are, did a poll.
I did do a poll, and let's explore these poll results briefly. I'll feel like Nate Silver from 538 for a moment, though of course our polling is not scientific and we would surely get a grade of F from our friends over at 538. Anyway, this Twitter poll, I presented the question as, all right, based on feedback during tonight's chat, it sounds like people are curious. How do you feel about prologues and epilogues? Tell us why in the comments. And the options were love them or loathe them. I did not leave a middle ground because I wanted to be as polemic as possible, because I think that generates, a little more engagement. But in the end, it turns out it was a 2/3 in favor of prologues and epilogues and 1/3 that quote unquote loathes them. That said, though, we've talked about it over the course of the conversation, a number of comments on that poll, people exploring what it is that can make a prologue or an epilogue worth it. Some people saying those same things make a prologue and epilogue not worth it. So again, it's that no accounting for taste situation. You know, we're very much in a world where everyone kind of knows what they're looking for, even if they don't know how to phrase it, they know it when they see it kind of thing. And that really, that showed up in our results from our poll.
And it is interesting to me that, and this happens over and over, I think, in the publishing industry, that what traditional publishers or agents are looking for right now is, because they're always projecting into the future, right? Because even after they acquire a book, it's still going to be another year or so before it's published. Yep. And so on. But so what is reflected in traditional publishing is sort of the future of it, and it doesn't necessarily reflect what readers' values are in that particular moment.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. That's and I guess that's a sign, too, then, if we are to take what is said here in the actual tweet that prompted this by Whitney, of course. You know, if agents are saying, if you have a prologue, send your first chapter, well, that might be a cue then to us as writers that prologues are going to, at least in the view of the agents who would take this view, they're going to continue to kind of be on the wayside. We're not at least going to present prologues as prologues. And that might be a cue to us to, you know, frame our own writing a little bit differently to match up with at least where they see the industry going insofar as prologues are concerned.
And, you know, this is very simple poll on Twitter, so it's limited usefulness of data, but it would be interesting to me just not to do it, but if we were to have conversations with those people, like, would they be disappointed if they opened a book and it didn't have a prologue? I'm guessing probably not. I'm guessing they wouldn't even notice that it didn't have a prologue.
That is a very good point. And another reason why Nate Silver would give this poll an F, it doesn't have a lot of statistical validity to it. And in fact, at the time of this recording, I'm sure the poll is actually still live. So, you know, the results could have come in the last hour that pushed it in another direction. But just a small snapshot at what folks are thinking about prologues and epilogues. So with all that in mind, I think we can draw our conversation to a close here. I do want to let people know that I think you are in agreement on this. We very much like, you know, getting this participation in WritesCast chats, but that's not the only way to stay in touch with us. Please, if you ever have a thought for a topic or a reflection on something we've covered in one of these episodes, please reach out to us by email or on Twitter. Email is going to be writescast@gmail.com, and make sure you do writescast. A lot of folks leave out that S in the middle, and I fear things are getting lost sometimes, but it's writescast@gmail.com or on Twitter as @writescast, or head over to writescast.net. There's a contact page there too if you want to just use that as a portal to get in touch, and we'd love to hear from you. And on the note of engagement, as usual, we will be putting up a poll so that you can choose the next topic we cover in this program. We will put the poll up on Twitter right after the episode debuts. It'll be up for a week, and we will ask you, our dear listeners, what you would like us to cover. And the options for the next episode will be Fatal Flaws, third option storytelling, which is, again, pushing past default images and finding ways to give our characters, you know, these creative ways to get out of situations where it felt like maybe there were only two options. So Fatal Flaws, third option storytelling, and new to the poll this time around is the role of exposition. A new possibility for you to choose from. And of course, you can always choose other in that poll and leave something in the comments if you want us to cover it in a future episode, or if you want us to put it in our pool of possibilities that we are always, you know, adding to. And then, unfortunately, we can only get one new possibility on these polls every month, but we will cover as much as we can over the course of any given year and any given episode, of course. So, very good. That's what we'll have there for you. And, of course, there's always going to be the upcoming WritesCast chat on the listener-selected topic. So, again, hang out on Twitter @WritesCast for more info on the date and time for all of that. But that said, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us for this episode of Novel Approaches here on the WritesCast Network.
For more writerly podcast content like this, visit writescast.net or follow us on Twitter @writescast. I'm also on Twitter @writelearndream. I'd love to connect with you and hear what you're working on.
And I am over on Twitter as I am R.R. Campbell. And thanks as always to our patrons at patreon.com/rightscast. We continue to be on the cusp of unlocking a fourth episode every month. Patrons, I know, we're just so close. I mean, literally one more person, I think it might be two more people now, can really make sure we clear the hurdle that we want to hit to get to 4 podcasts per month. Aside from helping us unlock a fourth podcast every month, people who choose to contribute to the RightsCast Network financially also get some really other cool perks like RightsCast Network swag, discounts on my editing services, you'll get votes in the RightsCast Awards when those come around again next year, and of course, this is my favorite perk that I like to share with those who choose to support this network. You get exclusive, early, ad-free access to all of our programming, and you get an email every time that I put an episode up that is ad-free, exclusive, and early for you. So again, you can contribute $1, $2, $3 per episode or per month over at patreon.com/rightscast. Help us unlock that fourth episode every month. I say that as if I'm like really, really excited about it, and I am, because it would be wonderful to put more content out there. I'm also a little panicked about having to come up with a fourth episode every month. So, you know, folks, you can, if you feel like making me work a little harder, if you don't feel like I'm working hard enough, here's your chance. Throw a couple pennies in my hat and I will do an extra dance for you on the fourth Friday of every month. Again, patreon.com/rightscast.
You'll have help. You'll have help.
Good. Woo, like that.
We'd especially like to thank Laura Hazen and Kristen Oakley, whose contributions at the Wise Mentor level earn the two of them shout-outs in every RightsCast Network episode, on top of all the other great patron awards they receive.
So to learn more, again, that's patreon.com/rightscast. Love to see you over there showing your support. Next up on the RightsCast Network, we've got an episode featuring Michael G. Williams on writing horror. I feel like I need to insert like a spooky organ or something, but yes, Michael G. Williams writing horror. That episode will debut on June 21st at rightscast.net and wherever you listen to podcasts.
I can't wait. That's it for this episode of Novel Approaches. Thank you for listening.
Until next time, you know what to do. Write on and write well. This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net.